Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday. And Nancy Pearl is our guest. I don't know about you, but I'm going on vacation starting next week. I did not plan this show just because I'm going on vacation and could use a list of great books to read. I know that many of us spend our summer times not as busy as during the rest of the year. At least most of us have a break for a little while, be it in our backyards, or I'm going up to northern Wisconsin, Lake, and then to Minnesota, where you can't drink beer. I don't drink beer anyhow, but we'll be sitting on a lake reading books and looking at the constellations and watching the loons. I have hundreds of pictures of loons. They all look about the same, but they're always like seeing them for the first time. In case you're meeting Nancy for the first time, I have a feeling that everybody knows who Nancy Pearl is and that you've heard all of her shows. She's been on this show for years and years. She is one wonderful librarian. She had a library as a refuge. She had a rough childhood, and so she had librarians who became her friends, and she started reading, and she's worked as a librarian and also as a bookseller in Detroit and Tulsa and Seattle. She was the director of the Seattle Public Library. She had this terrific idea. If all of Seattle read the same book, you remember that program, and it carried on in cities all over the country. She has written a number of book lust books. Most recently, it's Book Lust to Go, recommended reading for travelers, vagabonds, and dreamers. She's writing a novel right now. I can't wait till her novel comes out. And she is here to talk about books that we ought to read. If you want a recommendation, or if you'd like to give us a recommendation, that's what we're going to do this hour. It's one of our favorite things of everything that we talk about. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. You may want to use Facebook instead. I'm not sure. Well, we can take some emails, too. Can we take emails? We can take emails. And if you go to Facebook, eventually we're going to have a list of all of the books that we talk about this hour. But I'd be real happy if you wrote them down, too. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, happy summer.
I know, except it's 70 degrees here. It's like we've missed all the heat. We had like 2 days of sun, and now it's sort of gray and what most people would call fall.
Oh, Nancy, I told you you should move here.
I know.
And you want to, so just do it.
I know.
I know. It'd be good, except it's going to be in the 90s. We're getting that heat wave tomorrow, so maybe you should wait. I'm sorry. You're missing out on summer.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So I just have to, like, read books that
well, of course,
me out of the where I am.
Well, I'm leaving for I'm not doing this show just for this reason. Actually, I didn't even book it on this day. Rhonda did, but I'm going on vacation for the next 2 weeks. So are you my perfect guest or what? I mean, you are absolutely perfect. But I first want to ask you about the novel, and I can't wait for it to come out. I really can't. It's going to be the highlight of the year, that book. How are you doing?
Well, it's very slow, partly because you know, I sort of didn't trust myself to do it, so I kept accepting speaking engagements. and so now I'm finding that there's not a lot of time, and lack of time plus a little lack of discipline makes it very hard to, like, come in and sit down and start working on it. And then I think there's the kind of normal, what if it's not good? And, I mean, I have to keep saying to myself, this is a book for me. I mean, this is a book that I would want to read, and that should be the only criteria. Otherwise, I think I get tangled up in the what if.
Right. So you do have to be disciplined. Do you think that you need a, I'm going to write from 8 to 12 and then take a break to walk in the rain?
Or? Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think, I mean, I would be happy writing from like 8 to 10 or 9 to 11. I think a two-hour block would be really good, and I'm very disciplined in almost everything else that I do in my life, but just there's this kind of push-pull thing with sitting in front of my computer and typing, writing really almost anything these days.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that is, but it's still there, and I have a wonderful project which I can't tell you yet.
Because
it's not totally fleshed out, but it's going to happen, and it's very exciting, and it has to do with books. So,
and you're not, that's all you can say. Thanks,
yes.
Nancy.
And the listeners who are so wonderful, your listeners who are so wonderful and so love books so much, I think will just love this.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yes.
When will you know about it?
Well, every week it's supposed to be this week, and then every week it turns out to be not this week. So
okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay, Nancy.
I can but hope.
All right. Well, let us know.
I will.
Thank you.
I'll email.
All right. Well, I'll just start off with, you know, I'm in nonfiction because of the nature of what I do. But I have two books that I will recommend that I liked. And maybe it's because I love this interview so much. It's not that it's all that well, you know, it's not exceptional writing. But this Life of Deval Patrick, he was with us last week, this Reason to Believe, Lessons from an Improbable Life. I finished his book and finished talking to him and thought, here's a worthwhile human being who's really taken care of a lot of people. It was really inspirational to me, and he was a great guy.
Wow, so, that's good.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know if he's running for president eventually or why he spent an hour with us. I never could answer that question. But he did it so graciously, and it was lovely. The second one was, which you can read chapters at a time, Bill Moyers has his The Conversation Continues journal with interviews with some very exceptional people that I found to be inspirational.
And Bill Moyers himself, I think, is so inspirational. I think that he's one of those people who I had the fortune to be his host when he came to Seattle.
Oh, did you? Oh.
Yep, to do the third If All Seattle Read the Same Book for his collection his compilation of poems.
Oh, great.
And he's, I just thought, both my husband and I thought he was just even nicer and kinder and everything in person than he is on television, where he's both kind and knowledgeable. Just his personal being was so exceptionally warm, and we really liked him.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
What are you reading?
Well, I'm reading, there's a book coming out this fall, and I know the publishers would send you a copy of it, but I think you would really enjoy it. It's by the woman, Candace Millard, who wrote River of Darkness.
Yes.
About Theodore Roosevelt's trip down the...
Yes. Amazon. I love that book.
Yes. And evidently her editor said to her, well, what's your next book going to be? And she said, I want to write a book about President Garfield.
Oh, my gosh.
And she said, skin dropped. Like President Garfield. Well, then I started going around asking people what they knew about President Garfield, and it pretty much ranged from nothing. You know, Garfield, well, who did he, when was he president? To, oh, Garfield, he was one of the people who was assassinated, one of the presidents who were assassinated. But Candace Millard, the book is called The Destiny of the Republic.
Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Thursday, we'll talk home improvement with an eye toward the environment with Chad Spade and John Viner. You have a project on the horizon and need some advice, they'll be happy to help. I hope you'll join us for some great information. That's Thursday at 11 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Very, very early.
Support for WPR comes from the Henry Vilas Zoo, celebrating 100 years in 2011. Between Memorial and Labor Day, the zoo will embark on a 100-day-long 100th anniversary celebration filled with festivities, special events, and lots of family fun. Details at vilaszoo.org.
And his family had known that for a long time, but no one had taken the steps to kind of stop his behavior by incarcerating him or sending him for treatment or whatever their treatment was in the 1870s. But he really, what Candace Millard points out is that Garfield's death was due in a way less to the shooting that was supposed to kill him than to the ineptness of the medical profession at that time.
Oh, my.
And it's just, I mean, it's one of those books that you just read and you think, oh, I didn't know any of this.
No, I know almost nothing about him.
Yeah, and Alexander Graham Bell was involved with it.
Ah.
Yeah. Oh, it was just amazing.
All right. That's that's number one.
Yeah, you've got to try to get that. And the publisher is Doubleday.
Doubleday. Okay. Yeah, okay. That'll be a natural interview, too.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah.
It'll be great.
Fiction?
Fiction. Well, yeah. I'm reading fiction.
Yes.
I'm reading, I've been fortunate to find a lot of several works of fiction in a row, which is always a treat. But the one that I really loved is a book called, I mean, I've loved a lot of them, but the first one I guess I'll mention is called The Watery Part of the World.
Okay.
By a man named Michael Parker. And I have never read anything else by Michael Parker. I don't, in fact, even know if he's written anything else. But this is just one of those very special novels. It's based on two pieces of historical fact. And the first piece is that in the 1840s, Aaron Burr's daughter, whose name was Theodosia, married the governor of South Carolina, and she was taking a trip from South Carolina up to New York to visit her father when the boat disappeared, and nobody knows what happened to her. So there's that kind of historical mystery. So that's one piece that Michael Parker draws on. The other piece is that in the 1970s, the three last residents of a small barrier island, one African-American man and two white sisters, left the island to move onto the mainland. And around those two things, Parker has constructed this absolutely beautiful book about all the people that these three people come in contact with, or that you know, perhaps Theodosia washed ashore on one of the barrier islands and what happened to her. How he ties it all together is it's just beautiful.
Oh, it sounds great.
You know, he just understands people, I think, and you don't get hit over the head with any of his observations. I mean, it's all there, but it's very subtle. Not subtle enough that you'll miss it, but subtle enough that you don't feel like, okay, I hear what you're telling me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like what you wrote, and I've heard you say this, but if you would say it again in your piece for National Public Radio on 10 Terrific Summer Reads, what it is that you look for in a book, and this is fiction or nonfiction.
Right.
I like this answer.
Well, what I look for always is three-dimensional characters and language, and written in language that blows me away, that I can't read it quickly because I'm cherishing the way it's written. And most of my reading, I would say, falls into that category. I find if a book, I'm probably the most critical reader. I mean, I just cannot abide bad grammar or when somebody is rendering dialogue and people are saying, it is this, or we will do this. Normally there's an apostrophe in what we say, and then I get frustrated, and then I think, well, I'm not going to read the book. Life is too short to deal with that. So Michael Ondaatje is one of my favorite writers. Salman Rushdie, Midnight's Children, is one of my all-time favorite books. Ann Tyler, those kind of writers who just make the language something other than just words strung together one after another.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I look for.
That's good to look for that. We're going to take phone calls. Our lines are filled for Nancy, but just keep trying. Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour, and we are talking books. 800-486-8655 is our number, and the email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We start our phone calls for Nancy with Boyd from Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning, Nancy. Always a pleasure.
Good morning.
Start out, three books that I'm reading. I'm reading, first of all, Mystery, An Unpardonable Crime, and the author's name is Andrew Taylor. It takes place in 1819 in London, And one of the main characters in there is a very young boy, an American boy, who's studying over there by the name of Edgar Allan Poe.
What a surprise for it.
Beg your pardon?
No, what a surprise. I know what a fan you are.
Yes. Yeah, it's and it deals with a part of his life that, you know, I don't know too much about, that we're hearing a lot of. And I'm trying to read as much as I can, even more about Poe, since next year in March, they're going to be making a full-length film. It'll be a mystery film where Edgar Allan Poe helps a detective try and solve some crimes, and all the murders are based on his short stories, and the actor John Cusack will be playing Poe.
Wow.
Just two other books. I think, Kathleen, you may have covered this one on your show a few years back. Did Lincoln own slaves? And other questions about Abraham Lincoln. I think anyone that's into Lincoln, whether they've read 20 books or haven't read any books, is always going to pick up something new in this book. It's a really well-planned book. And some of the questions they have in there, I'm thinking people actually ask that about Lincoln. It's really a lot of fun. And then finally, if people are into comic books and things like that or graphic novels, I've recently reading, they've republished some strips of Casper the Friendly Ghost by Harvey Comics, and they're really, really good. And it's, you know, obviously comics of, you know, a generation or two before me, but a lot of fun, and I enjoy reading that. And then finally, my question is, Nancy, I'm really interested in reading anything on Sparta, and anything that you can recommend, I would really appreciate. And that's all. Thanks.
All right, everyone. Thanks, Boyd. Thanks for your call.
I'm going to aim for something about the Peloponnesian War, which was between Sparta and Athens. And there is a wonderful novel called The Road to Sardis, S-A-R-D-I-S, which is about a young man fighting in the Peloponnesian War and what happens when Sparta is the victor. So that would be, not exactly on Sparta, but a little bit tangential to that, but it's such a wonderful book. I want everybody to read it. It is out of print, so you'd have to go on to Thrift Books or A Libris or Abe Books, one of the used book people, to see if you can find a copy. It's wonderful, though. And there's a wonderful new graphic novel about Lewis and Clark.
Oh.
Which I think is just thoroughly, just a wonderful, wonderful history told in this new way, and sort of showing how the text can be enhanced by the pictures. Because I think if you just read the text, you wouldn't get nearly what you get from seeing the pictures as well.
We go to Mary in Eau Claire. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I want to recommend Berlin Noir, which is actually a trilogy of novels by Philip Carr. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name.
And, I think her, but I'm not sure.
How do you spell it?
K-E-R-R.
Okay.
Anyways, it's three novels together in a volume, and it's the hard-boiled detective genre set in Nazi Germany. And the plotting is gripping, and part of the problem is this private investigator keeps getting drawn deeper and deeper into moral compromises with the Nazis. And in the last book, A German Requiem, it's in post-war Germany, where there were plenty of moral compromises to be made, too. But as I say, the plotting's excellent. I had to sit down and write out who is who on the first novel, and it's a nice Philip Marlowe read with rich, rich, rich historical detail.
Wonderful. Do you know them, Nancy?
I do know them, and for some reason I have never been able to get into them, but I know that people adore them, and I'm trying to think of the other writer. I know somebody who's listening will be able to do this, whose books are also set at about the same time. Oh, I'm going to keep thinking.
Okay. Thanks, Mary, very much for the call. An email that's come in from Julie. My two best reads this year were Winter Garden by Kristen Hanna and Those Who Save Us by Jenna Bloom. Both books gave me insights into World War II that we never heard about. Winter Garden took an average family in Russia during the war, and we examine them. And the other books look at what a German, young German mother did to save her child.
Yes. Good selection.
Yeah.
There's a book by Ella Leftland called Rumors of Peace, which is set, it's about a young teenager living through World War II in a California town where the threat of invasion is really prevalent, much more so than it was more inland, I think. And it's a book for adults. It isn't a book for teens, but that would be another one to add to the Jenna Bloom and the Kristen Hanna.
Okay.
To make it a troika.
All right. Yes, we like that. And who's the author?
The author is Ella Leftland, and I think it's one F, L-E-F-L-A-N-D.
Okay, great. Eugene from Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Kathleen, and to your guests. A book I'd like to recommend, and I just got done with it, is Wounded Knee, Party Politics, and the Road to an American Massacre. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
It tells how the Republicans, after that massacre, tried to do a cover-up on it in the Congressional Medals of Honor they handed out, and it also compares the economy of then to today. And it just does an excellent job.
All right. And the author? Eugene?
The author is Heather Richardson. I believe the book is copyright 2011.
Okay.
And there's another new book that is, again, tangential to that, but I think does a wonderful job of taking an iconic event, iconic figures, and making them human for us. And that's Nathaniel Philbrick's The Last Stand, Custer Sitting Bull in the Battle of the Little Bighorn, which was, of course, some years before the book, Richardson's book. But it was one of those books that pretty much I'll read anything that Nathaniel Philbrick writes because he writes so well and makes history so interesting. But I thought this one was particularly good.
Thank you, Eugene. Andy in Mercer, hi.
Hi, go.
Hi, Andy.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to ask your guest if she's noticed that not more and more novels seem to have the quotations being put right into the text paragraph rather than as a separate line or separate entry. And also sometimes I'm seeing quotations without even having quotation marks in them, and they're very difficult to read. I just put the book down and go on to something else. It's easier.
Yeah, I've especially been aware you know, I heave a deep sigh when I see those quotations without quotation marks. And I haven't gotten to the point where I put them down immediately. And I know it's ridiculous. I feel, for me, it's ridiculous to judge a book by whether it has quotation marks or not. But I just wonder what the purpose of it is. And why the author chose to do that. Was there a good reason to do that? And I can't think of one, except maybe in Jose Saramago's book, Blindness, which also has no quotation marks and almost no paragraph breaks. So I have noticed that more and more people are doing that, and I'm not sure why.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Rick in La Crosse, hi.
Yeah, I want to recommend some oldies. Eric Maria Remarque's The Night in Lisbon. Everyone's read All Quiet on the Western Front, but this is awesome. It's about this couple that's escaping Germany, and they end up in Lisbon, which is like a bed of spies back then, Lisbon, Portugal. And I recommend it. It's a short novel, it's just very gripping. And you learn a lot about the city of Lisbon as well in its short pages. And then I wonder if you've read also Andre Schwarzbart's The Last of the Just.
which is fantastic.
I read it years and years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Probably time to read it again, actually. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Rick, very much for the call. What about some of those books that we read years and years ago that we need to read again?
I think that our society is just so fixated on what's new.
I know.
Is that we forget that there are just some wonderful, wonderful books that were written 50 years ago, mm-hmm. or 100 years ago, or even long. I mean, the Iliad or Oedipus Rex. I sort of think everybody should read Sophocles' play Oedipus Rex, and then think about it and talk about it. You know, what it means about fate and free will. I just think that we don't pay enough attention to those older titles. And I have never read The Night in Lisbon, but I'm going to read it. I just put it on hold at the library.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Of all books, isn't it amazing how life works that way?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he calls in that you put that book, of all the books in the world, on hold at the library.
Because I loved All Quiet on the Western Front. I think that's one of the classics.
I did, too.
That we should go back and reread, or even though it's so painful, Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got His Gun.
Mm-hmm.
And because they give a view of the world that is sort of our world, but we've changed it so much. Things were kind of easier then,
right.
or harder,
right.
both ways. But the whole thing about All Quiet on the Western Front and World War I is that another trend I think we're seeing is that we're getting more and more books about World War I, and Adam Hochschild has a really interesting book about the home front and World War I in England, and the people who were for the war, the people who were against the war, what that meant in their lives, how it broke families apart, the Pankhursts, the women's suffrage people agreed on women's suffrage, but they split when it came to whether Britain should go to war against Germany. And, you know, the poetry that came out of World War I, Paul Fussell's book, The Great War and Modern Memory, which is one of the great books of the Western world.
The Great War and Modern Memory.
Yeah.
I haven't read that.
Yes. Oh, yeah, you've got to read it.
Okay.
It is so interesting.
Okay. I love it when you say that, because that's what makes me go get the book right away. You've got to read it.
You've
when you say that, I do it, Nancy. Let's go to Dan in Three Lakes. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Morning.
The book I recommend, I am almost finished with. Its title is Dog Sense, S-E-N-S-E. The author's name is John Bradshaw. And I've been involved with dogs, hunting dogs, for almost 50 years. And had some success as an amateur hunting dog trainer in field trials. But this is the latest research, and it's the interesting thing about it is it's completely at odds with those people like Cesar Millan, who say the dog is so closely related to the wolf that the dog is a pack animal, and in order to get the best behavior out of your dog, you have to be the superior, the alpha of its pack. He goes on to all kinds of experiments and tests that have been done with dogs to establish that the wolfiness of dogs has been eliminated by multiple generations of domestication. And I'll hang up.
Thanks, Dan. I know that book got good reviews. I haven't read it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Garth Stein's book, The Art of Racing in the Rain, with the dog as the narrator. And
yes.
And the narrator is, I think, sort of began, opened the floodgates for more books in which dogs are the narrator.
Yes.
And so there's a mystery series, actually, in which the dog is the narrator. Yeah. And there's a new one of those out. The library, your library can help you find that.
I like The Art of Racing in the Rain. I like that book.
Yeah, yeah. And Garth Stein is one of the nicest people.
Is he?
had the pleasure to meet.
Yeah. Does he have other books, Nancy?
He does. He has two earlier novels, which are very, very different than The Art of Racing in the Rain. One is called When Ravens Stole the Moon. And he's... They were never, I don't think, destined to be popular the way The Art of Racing in the Rain is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about my sort of troubles about trying to write my first novel. And then I think about Garth trying to write a new book after the success of The Art of Racing in the Rain. And it's a little bit frightening.
Right. Well, Nancy, all you have to do is do the first book.
I know.
Yeah, that's all you have to do.
I know.
All right. All right. And we're waiting for it. We're anxious to see it. So that should motivate you. Right?
Yes.
Well, we'll see it. No hurry, but we're looking forward to it.
All right.
Deanne, thanks for the call. Karen in Rolling Stone, Minnesota. How are things in Minnesota, Karen?
Well, not so good.
Not so
actually,
good.
Actually, not as bad as in Wisconsin right now.
Oh, great.
We all say thank you for Governor Dayton. I have two books. A number of years ago, I took the book Shogun by James Clavell for spring break reading, and I could not stop. And I heard my husband answer the telephone. He said, "Oh, Karen's not here. She's gone to Japan for spring break." These two books brought me to two different places. The first one is Cutting for Stone by Abraham Verghese. I had read a nonfiction book by him years ago. He's an Indian-American doctor, and he had written about AIDS patients that he encountered right at the beginning of the AIDS epidemic in Tennessee, and I just love that book. And this year for Christmas, my husband found this book. Cutting for Stone is the story of two twin brothers who are part Indian, part British, but they're growing up in Ethiopia on the compound of a hospital named Missing Hospital, because when the hospital was named by some missionaries as Mission Hospital, the person who was writing it down didn't understand mission and wrote Missing Hospital. It is a rich and wonderful story. I never thought I'd be so interested in what happened in Ethiopia in the last half of the last century, but this book brought me there, and it's one of those books that when I finished the last page and set it down, my first thought was, I have to read it again. It is a wonderful, wonderful book, very well written. One of the reviewers said, you may never leave the chair when you begin this book. And another reviewer compared Verghese to Chekhov in his understanding of both the human heart and the human body. It's an amazing story.
Oh, Karen, sounds great.
I kept myself from reading it right away again, and now my husband's reading it, so I have to wait a little while, but it's just a wonderful book. The other one is a book that technically is a children's book, but I read it to my 9, 7, and 5-year-old grandchildren this winter. And this is another book that when we finished, the 5-year-old said, "Can we start over?" It brings us to China, and it's part fairy tale, it's part story of Chinese culture. It's about a girl named Min Li who is working hard in the fields. Her family is very, very poor. They only have enough for rice for each person at night, and the father makes their supper a good time by telling her old fairy tales each night. And so she believes these stories, and she starts on a journey to find the old man in the moon and ask him how their luck will change, when will their fortune change, and she encounters the most interesting characters on the way. She is a rich character, and this story is just seamlessly woven together. My youngest grandson sometimes months afterwards would say to me things right in the middle of the day. Remember Min Li? Or remember Afu and Dafu? So it just made a huge impression on
What's the name of it, Karen?
Where the Mountain Meets the Moon. It was a Newbery Honor book.
Okay.
The same year that the book about, I can't remember the name. It's related to another book. No, another book right now. But I think this should have won every possible prize. It's just an amazing book for anyone.
Thank you, Karen. Yeah, I think you should be a storyteller. She sold me, Nancy.
Oh, me too. I was saying she should be a librarian and do book talks.
Yes, she should.
I mean, I have seldom heard as wonderful a book talk as you gave, Karen. They were superb.
Yes, it was lovely. Thank you, Karen, very much for the call. Kurt in Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Good morning. Thank you for this book review. Very good. I'm suggesting, and whether your guest has seen it or not, the relatively unknown Russian author, 19th century. We're so familiar with Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Chekhov, and all those great authors. Leskov, much less known here in the West, but very popular, has been very popular in Russia. And the book I'm currently reading is The Cathedral Clergy. It's a story of the trials and tribulations of any town, Russia, rural, small Russian town, with the set in the environment of the later 19th century political, cultural, religious ferment going on in Russia at the time. And you don't have to know a whole lot about that. The story itself stands on its own, and it has a recent Leskov is very difficult to translate, but the translation I'm reading just came out last year, translated by Margaret Winchell, Slavica Press. A great translation with the necessary explanations of things that might appear difficult or misunderstood by non-Russians. So it might have a small audience because of its setting, but I would recommend it.
Sounds great.
Great. Thank you very much, Kurt, for the call. Do you want to talk about any of the other books, Nancy, in your 10 summer reads, terrific reads?
I guess the only other one of the other books that I'd really like to bring people's attention to is a wonderful novel that is funny and touching and has terrific characters. It's called The Coffins of Little Hope by Timothy Shaffert. Shaffert. And it really is a triumph of storytelling. The characters are quirky. He weaves into the story humor, compassion, insight into human strengths and foibles. And the main character is a woman, an 83-year-old woman named S.E. Miles, but she's known by Essie. Who writes the obituaries for her grandson Doc's newspaper in a small Nebraska town.
Mm.
This is one of those books which has many subplots that only a very skilled writer could do as good a job as Tim Shaffert did in weaving them together. One of the subplots is that the author of a fabulously successful series of children's books, that man's publisher hires Doc's press to print the last book because they don't want, sort of like if you were the printer for the last Harry Potter book, you'd want it done in some out-of-the-way place where there was no chance that somebody would get a look at it first. And the name of the series is The Coffins of Little Hope, which is where the title comes from. But even though this small town in Nebraska is way off the interstate and very few people ever come there, pages start showing up, pages of this last book start showing up mysteriously. So that's one kind of subplot that Essie has to deal with. Another subplot is that one of the local women who lives outside the town, really in the country, reports that her teenage daughter was stolen, kidnapped by her not very nice ex boyfriend.
Ooh.
And the problem is that no one has ever seen the daughter. So they don't know if this woman is making this up or if the daughter really exists. And, you know, and then there's a few other plots involving Essie's great-granddaughter, Ivy. But what I was so impressed with is how seamlessly everything comes together, and it all comes together around Essie. And we get to know Essie, I think, in the same way that we got to know Olive Kitteridge in Elizabeth Strutt's novel.
Oh, sure.
Or Mrs. Bridge in Evan Connell's novel. You just really get to see her. And, I mean, she's very self-aware. She's very wry. She has a secret or two of her own. And I've been thinking about how to best characterize it. And I think it's perfect. This is what I came up with. Perfect for readers looking for realism with a heart by an author who cares about his characters and wants you to also.
Wonderful. Oh, that sounds great.
And the last line, which I won't quote, is the last two lines are just perfect.
Just perfect.
Yeah.
High praise
perfect
from you, Nancy. I think somebody ought to do a compilation of some of the more fascinating obituaries. There must be some. It's actually time for kind of an update on the writing of obituaries. Some of them are very standard, but people's lives are complex, and there ought to be some great writing about how people lived lives.
Well, there was a book several years ago now by the man who used to write the New York Times obituaries, and he wrote the best obituaries.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I can find the name of that book. I don't remember it offhand.
Okay.
But reading his, it's just you see how writing an obituary can be a creative act.
Right. Exactly.
And this book, I mean, I always felt, you know, he died very young, the writer, but I had always hoped that he would outlive me, so maybe he could write my obituary.
Oh, Nancy. Nancy, you can write your own. Just stash it away for many years.
Right.
Thanks,
right.
Kurt, for the call. John in Green Bay, hi.
Yes, good morning. Just recently I inherited a four-volume set from an elderly gentleman friend of mine that passed away. It's a four-volume set on Abraham Lincoln, and it's by Carl Sandburg.
Mm-hmm.
Copyright's 1939, and I was just wondering, I haven't had a chance to get into it, if she's familiar with it, if, you know, the accuracy and what I'll find in that.
Well, I think that Carl Sandburg, you know, poet, is a great writer, was a great admirer of Lincoln, and that what you'll find is a laudatory view of Lincoln based on what they knew up to that point. So, you know, I mean, one of the nice things is it's going to be unclouded by revisionist history or anything that's happened to make us rethink the Civil War or any of those events. So I would say, oh, yeah, I would definitely try it.
Oh,
if you
most
find yourself
definitely
bored, stop reading it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, John, for the call. More phone calls in a moment. Nancy, let's put this in your mind as we go to a pause here so you can think about it. Where the heck is it? Dixie just hosted a foreign exchange student from Bangladesh and was wondering if you could recommend nonfiction or fiction about the country, or especially the capital city. So we'll let you think about that for a while.
Okay.
And we'll take more phone calls. Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We will eventually have a list of all of these suggestions on our Facebook page, so bear with us, but the page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and there will be a list of book recommendations in the days to come. Not many days to come, but in a few days to come. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl, our guest, did something relating to Bangladesh come to mind?
It's coming.
Okay. All right. We'll give you. We have minutes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Let me keep thinking.
All right, Nancy.
Because most of what I'm remembering is nonfiction, which is pretty staid, I think.
Okay.
Okay.
Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. You were speaking a few minutes ago about reading an old book, and I just reread A Handful of Dust by Alec Wow, which is just a wonderful book. I'm going to, this just captured my heart. It takes place in England in about the 1930s, about an upper-class married couple and their trials and tribulations. And I also reread a book by Ursula Hage called The Vision of Emma Blau. And I love Ursula Hage's books. This one I liked probably the best of all of them because it carries a family down through several generations, which I've always enjoyed reading because Edward Rutherford started me out on Sarum, and I've hardly ever recovered from it. And, of course, that covers many millennia. So I'm wondering what Nancy could provide for me in terms of a saga-type book that carries a family down through many generations and encompasses many varied people.
An author that I would suggest, and his books are just now back in print by Source Books, are the Malcolm McDonald series.
Malcolm McDonald, okay.
Yeah, McDonald with an M-A-C, I believe.
Okay.
And take, you know, there's many of them to read, and they're just wonderful.
Oh, good.
Ongoing family. Another author who just came into my... Oh, R.F. Delderfield.
Spell that, please.
D-E-L-D-E-R-F-I-E-L-D.
Okay.
So those two series will keep you reading, and I think you'll really enjoy them.
Oh, good, good. Would you agree with me about Handful of Dust being
yes.
a wonderful
oh,
book?
Oh, yes, although my favorite Evelyn Waugh book is Scoop, which is just this... this sort of violent, snarky satire about the newspaper world. And the main character goes to be a reporter in South Asia or the Middle East, and everything he learns there, it's just so, you know, it's of its time, so there's a little bit of racism, there's a little bit of anti-Semitism, there's certainly sexism, all of those things, but for its time, I just laughed out loud in that book and groaned. Oh, that's still going on.
Well, considering what's going on with Rupert Murdoch, this should be good reading.
Yes, oh, absolutely. Yep.
Thanks, Nancy.
The library should have it for sure.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Dixie in Iowa. Hi.
Hi, this is Dixie.
Hi, Dixie.
My recommendation is for Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals. And at the same time, or as soon as I finished that, I read April 1865, which went with that really well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't think you've mentioned children's books, but I just bought for my grandsons the old Mike Mulligan and the Choo Choo books with the wonderful pencil sketches in them.
Uh-huh. Oh, the Mike Mulligan. Oh, Virginia. What was her last name? Virginia. I can't remember the author's last name.
I can't think of it either.
I know. Virginia something. But, oh, Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel is so wonderful. And The Little House is wonderful as well by her.
And it's Virginia Lee Burton. Chrissy.
Virginia Lee Burton, of course.
Yeah, Chrissy was on the money on that one.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. We just had Doris Kearns Goodwin on a couple weeks ago because she was in Milwaukee. I had a chance to chat with her for a while. And I like that book, too. It's very well written and very well researched and is considered one of the, I think it's a classic about the Lincoln cabinet and
yes, I think it'll be timeless, and it really gives you a look right inside that cabinet.
Yeah, it remains pretty popular.
And justifiably so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dixie. Al in Madison. Oh, my goodness, we're running out of time. Al, hi.
Hi. I wanted to lift up a book, Acedia by Kathleen Norris. My wife and I were at a spiritual writing workshop at Holy Wisdom Monastery here in Madison few weeks ago, and she brought that up, and I thought of it. I have it on call now at the library, but I thought of Nancy when she's talking about the difficulty of getting at writing the novel.
Uh-huh.
And she talks, I don't know if you've heard of this book, but Acedia, as she said, is kind of that arrogant, dispirited, despair kind of feeling,
right,
that originally it was associated with monks and nuns in the Middle Ages and so on in monasteries. But anyone who works alone and is self-motivated runs up against acedia.
Wow.
Acedia.
Yeah.
Thank you, Al, for your call. Nancy, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us, as
You're
always.
Welcome.
Thank you.
It's always my pleasure. And the book is called, on Bangladesh, a novel called Shame.
Shame.
S-H-A-M-E.
Oh, you've got a memory.
And
that's
it's by N-A-S-R-I-N.
N-A-S-R-I-N.
Yes.
Thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Nancy Pearl.
Vacation.
Thank you, Nancy Pearl. I will be on vacation for a while, going to northern Wisconsin and then to Minnesota. So John Munson will be here. He's a great host, and I know you love him. So he'll be here, and I'll be with you when I'm back, which won't be too long. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is the Ideas Network.